Follow us on Twitter at Louis Gang Entertainment, on YouTube and Instagram at Louis Gang. It will mean so much to the whole team.
It is human nature to be intrigued by a fascinating mystery, and there are many baffling mysteries that have remained unanswered for many years. From unsolved disappearances and deaths to creepy letters and phone calls, I hope that these terrifying mysteries will keep you intrigued. Sit back, relax, and prepare to ponder these unsettling disappearances and mysteries that are still unsolved. Joshua Maddox. 18-year-old Joshua was popular and well-liked at school, a laid-back guy who liked to write and play his music. He also liked to go hiking around the area of Woodland Park in Colorado, where he lived. On the 8th of May 2008, Joshua said goodbye to his sister Kate and set off for a walk. He never returned. Weeks, months, and years went by, but there was still no sign of Joshua. His family hoped that he'd gone off to start a new life somewhere, and that he would eventually get back in touch. In August of 2015, a local builder named Chuck Murphy was demolishing his old wooden cabin. It had been unused for over 10 years. The cabin was surrounded by tall pine trees on a large plot of land, and had become derelict. Chuck decided to knock down the building because the land had been sold to a property developer. Up until 2005, Chuck's brother had lived in the cabin, but now it was used for storage. Demolition began, and upon reaching the internal chimney, a horrifying discovery was made. Human remains were found in the chimney cavity. The male body was in a fetal position, with his legs above his head. Chuck informed the police, and the coroner was able to use dental records to identify the body of Joshua Maddox. Sadly, the cabin was only 1 mile from Joshua's home, but because of its location, it was thought that no one would have heard any cries for help that Joshua may have made, and unfortunately, although the cabin was only a couple of blocks from the Maddox's home, it had never been searched. Chuck was adamant that on his few visits to the cabin, he had never noticed anything unusual except a strange smell, which he naturally assumed was due to animals. The coroner, Al Bourne, carried out an autopsy. He could find no trace of drugs or alcohol in Joshua's body, and there was no sign of trauma either. Bourne said that it was very confusing. He continued, "It was not an instant death. How he died is only a matter of speculation, but we know that he did not starve to death because that takes many weeks. So then you have dehydration, which can just take a few days, and hypothermia, which could take a day or two. We have no evidence to say which one came first." As he was unable to find an actual cause of death, Bourne gave a verdict of accidental death, and stated that Joshua had probably climbed down the chimney to get into the cabin and become stuck. As the temperatures were in the minus figures at the time, he thought that once trapped in the chimney, Joshua would have died quite quickly from hypothermia. Chuck Murphy immediately questioned the verdict, saying that the wire mesh had been embedded into the bricks at the top of the chimney to stop animals falling down. Other details didn't quite add up either. Because of the positioning of Joshua's body, he would have had to go down the chimney head first. A breakfast bar had been dragged in front of the chimney by an unknown person. And, of course, why was Joshua found stripped of his clothing? It was found inside the house, folded up, meaning that Joshua would have somehow gained entry to the cabin, taken off his clothes, folded them into a neat pile, gone back outside the cabin, climbed onto the roof, and then somehow have got past the wire mesh and gone down the chimney head first. Although foul play has been suspected and a possible suspect has been named by several informants, the case remains a mystery and the original coroner's verdict still stands. The disappearances of Hannah Upp. Hannah Upp suffered from the condition Jason-Bourne syndrome, also known as dissociative fugue, which is a rare type of amnesia. This causes the sufferer to forget everything about their past and who they are. The amnesia may last for weeks or even much longer, and people experiencing a fugue state may believe they are someone else entirely, so they just take off and can travel great distances under this new false identity. In 2008, Hannah didn't arrive for her first day of work as a middle school teacher in Harlem, New York. Police were made aware of her disappearance and the search for Hannah began. Although she was spotted several times on CCTV in the city, police were unable to locate her. After 20 days missing, on the 16th of September, Hannah's body was spotted by the captain of the Staten Island Ferry. She was floating near to the Statue of Liberty, and although she was found lying face down, luckily, she was still alive. She was hospitalized with dehydration, hypothermia, and severe sunburn. She was rushed to a hospital and, incredibly, made a full recovery. Hannah was unable to remember anything that had happened during the 3 weeks that she was missing. She was given a series of neurological and psychological tests and diagnosed with dissociative fugue. In 2010, Hannah moved from New York to Kensington, Maryland, and began work as a teaching assistant. On the morning of her first day, her mother, Barbara, received a call from the police. Hannah's bag, purse, and mobile phone had been found on a woodland path, but there was no sign of Hannah. Again, flyers were put up, and the search began. The following night, at 10:30 p.m., Barbara received a call from an unknown number. It was Hannah. She had found herself over an hour walk away from the school at a muddy stream. She walked back towards her home and borrowed a phone from the first person that she saw. Again, she couldn't remember how she had ended up there. There were connections between the two disappearances. They had both occurred at the beginning of the school year, and on both incidents, she had been drawn towards water, where she had then become aware of who she was. In 2017, Hannah moved to the Virgin Islands. She got a job with preschoolers as a teaching assistant in St. Thomas. She loved living on the east of the island and called it her paradise. Hurricane Irma would strike the island on the 6th of September. Hannah was safe, although the island was devastated. A week later, Hannah said goodbye to her roommate and left for work, but never arrived. It was around that same time of year as her previous episodes of amnesia. Once more, a search for Hannah began. At a small bar on Sapphire Beach, friends found her dress, sandals, and car keys. Her car was found nearby, containing her passport, bag, purse, and phone. After just 3 days, the search had to be temporarily called off when a second hurricane hit the island. This time, it was Hurricane Maria. Despite friends and family continuing their search, Hannah has never been seen since. The Yuba County Five. Ted Weher, Gary Mathias, Jack Madruga, Jack Hewitt, and Bill Sterling had all spent the evening of Friday the 24th of February, 1978, at a California State University basketball game. They were all huge basketball fans and were going to play a game together the next day at the rehabilitation center they all attended. The boys, as they were referred to by their families, ranged in age from 24 to 32, and all had differing levels of either psychiatric or learning disabilities. Jack Madruga owned the turquoise Mercury Montego that the group were traveling in. The game ended at 10 p.m., and on the way back, the group stopped at a store to buy snacks. Then, mysteriously, instead of driving south towards home, the car went east and drove on for about 70 miles. That night, Joseph Schons was making his way into Plumas National Forest when his Volkswagen got stuck in the snow. He tried to push the car, but felt a sudden pain in his chest. Feeling ill, he got back in the car, not knowing that he had suffered a heart attack. Joe kept the engine running to keep warm and waited for another car to come along. He saw two sets of headlights in his rearview mirror. One set belonged to a car, the other to a pickup truck. Too weak to get out of the car, Joe watched both vehicles pass by and go around the next bend. After 30 minutes, Joe heard whistling and gathered up enough strength to go and look. He came to a car parked at the side of the road with several figures standing in front. He thought they were all men except for one woman who seemed to be holding a baby. He called out for help, but the group ignored him and turned out the car's headlights. Upset, Joe returned to his car where he saw the light of several torches moving around in the forest. Once again, he called for help, but as he did so, each light was turned out. At 4 a.m, his engine died, so Joe set out on foot. He passed the car, a turquoise Mercury still parked in the same spot, but now there was no sign of any of the people he had seen the night before. Despite his heart attack, Joseph walked 5 miles to a lodge and was driven home by the owner. The five boys never returned home, and so the search began. Joe Schons read about their disappearance in the newspapers and reported what he had seen on the night of the 25th to the police, who thought that he may have imagined it due to his distress. Although the car was found abandoned at the location stated, a search party could find no sign of them as the weeks turned into months. In June of that year, a group of bikers found a forest service trailer at a campsite 19 miles from the abandoned Mercury car. Inside, they found the emaciated body of Ted Weher. His shoes were missing, exposing his badly frostbitten feet. But why had Ted not eaten any of the canned food in the trailer or used the propane tank for heat? His beard growth showed that he'd been there for 8 to 13 weeks. The police were notified, and they soon found the bodies of Sterling, Madruga, and Hewitt just over 4 miles away. The only sign of Gary Mathias were his tennis shoes left behind in the trailer. It seemed he had swapped them for Ted's leather shoes. Why had the men gone into the forest instead of going home? Did they stumble across the trailer by accident, or were they led there? Who was the woman and the child that Joe had seen? And above all, where was Mathias? The case remains, to this day, a mystery. The Westfield Watcher. It was just after Derek Broadus had had his 40th birthday in 2014 that he and his wife Maria decided to buy 657 Boulevard after spending months searching for their ideal home. The Broadus family had finally found what they thought was the perfect place to bring up their 3 young children. After getting into a bidding war, they were finally able to purchase their new property for $1.3 million. The house was on a tree-lined avenue called the Boulevard in a wealthy part of Westfield, New Jersey. It was an imposing Victorian mansion that featured 6 bedrooms and 3.5 bathrooms. The Broaduses began renovations immediately, and then Derek found an envelope that had been left in the mailbox and was addressed to the new owner. The letter was dated June 4th, so it had been written before the house sale was ever made public. It read, "Dearest new neighbor at 657 Boulevard, allow me to welcome you to the neighborhood. How did you get here? Did 657 call to you with its force within? The house has been the subject of my family for decades now, and as it approaches its 110th birthday, I have been put in charge of watching and waiting for its second coming. My grandfather watched the house in the 1920s, and my father in the 1960s. It is now my time. Do you know the history of the house? Do you know what lies within the walls? Why are you here? I will find out. I see already you have flooded it with contractors to destroy the house as it was supposed to be. You don't want to make 657 Boulevard unhappy. You have children. I have seen them. So far, I think there are three that I have counted. Are there more on the way? I asked the woods to bring me young blood, and it looks like they have listened. Was your old house too small for the growing family, or was it greed to bring me your children? Once I know their names, I will call to them and draw them to me. Who am I? There are hundreds and hundreds of cars that drive by the house each day. Maybe I am in one. Look at all the windows you can see from 657 Boulevard. Maybe I am in one. Look out any of the windows in 657 Boulevard at all the people who stroll by each day. Maybe I'm one of them. The boulevard used to be the street to live on. You had made it if you lived on the boulevard. Welcome, my friends. Welcome. It was signed The Watcher. Derek reported the letter to the Westfield police. The Broaduses were understandably terrified, and when they were too frightened to move into the property, they received another letter that read, 657 Boulevard is anxious for you to move in. It has been years and years since the young blood of the house ruled the hallways. Have you found all the secrets it holds yet? Will the young blood play in the basement, or are they too afraid to go down there alone? Derek and Maria employed a former FBI agent, a private investigator, and even a forensic linguist, but no one was able to track down the mysterious writer. So, unwilling to put their children at risk, 6 months after they had bought their dream home, the family put 657 Boulevard back on the property market. However, rumor had spread, and unable to sell the property, they had to rent out the house. After receiving no letters for 2 years, another one did arrive 2 weeks after the renters moved in. It read, "You wonder who the Watcher is. Turn around, idiots." It then went on to list several ways it hoped the family would suffer, such as a car accident, or maybe a fire, where loved ones suddenly die. It went on to say, "You are despised by the house, and the Watcher won." And now you have the facts. 4 unsettling mysteries that are still unsolved. Please leave your own theories and speculations in the comments below, and like and subscribe to support the channel. Thank you for watching, and I'll see you next time.
Follow us on Twitter at LouieGang Entertainment, on YouTube and Instagram at LouieGang. It will mean so much to the whole team.